This week on Out of the Air features accomplished concert pianist and professor of piano, Jasmine Arakawa, who will be featured at Michigan City Chamber Festival on May 18th. Next, artist graphic designer Adam Halon, whose work is inspired by the region. Our spotlight is on Books, Brushes, and Bands for Education Youth Choir Concert and their annual Book Brigade in June.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart.
Welcome. You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, WVLP 103.1 FM, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. I'm Larry Breckner of New Perspectives Photography, right alongside here with Esther Golden of The Nest in Michigan City.
Aloha, everyone.
We're your hosts for Art on the Air. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. Art on the Air is heard every Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Also heard on Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at wvlp.org. Our spotlight interviews are also heard Wednesdays on Lakeshore Public Media. Information about Art on the Air is available at our website, breck.com/AOTA. That includes a complete show archive, spotlight interviews, plus our show is available on multiple podcast platforms, including NPR One. Please like us on Facebook, Art on the Air, WVLP, for information about upcoming shows and interviews. I'd like to welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight, and he's been with us before. He's going to tell us about a wonderful program called Books, Brushes, Bands, and Education, largely based out of Hammond, but we are expanding lately. And he's Ian Brumbridge, and he's the communications manager for the organization. And he's going to tell us about some of the things, well, that they just have had and that they have coming up both in the spring and summer. Ian, welcome back to Art in the Air Spotlight.
Yes, yeah, welcome, Ian.
Yes, thank you for having me. Happy to be here to talk about some of the great things that Books, Brushes, and Bands has done so far this year and some of the upcoming things we have. In the winter in March, we wrapped up Read Across the Region. So this is our second year doing this project where we bring community leaders into second grade classrooms to read. Last year, we did it in Hammond. This year, we were really excited to expand to include East Chicago and Gary second grade classrooms. That's over 30 classrooms, 1,000 second graders, really interacting with a lot of students, sharing an important story about kindness.
Oh, it's so wonderful. So how many readers did you have? How many people volunteered to do this?
So we had around 30 different readers representing banks. We had People's Bank representatives. Cleveland Cliffs came out and read in some of the East Chicago schools. So really representing a wide variety of businesses, sectors. Scott Miller, the chief of staff in Hammond, came out and read in one of our schools. So we really appreciate all the volunteer support that makes that whole week possible.
It's an excellent program.
Right. And you also just had your tea just a little while ago, too. Tell us a little about that. I know I attended it last year.
Yes, it'll be our 7th annual Spring Tea. This is our biggest fundraiser of the year and really a great weekend event to celebrate the arts and really everything that Books, Brushes, and Bands does as a community organization. At that Spring Tea, it was at the Halls of St. George in Cherville, where we've hosted it for the past few years. Our choir programs performed, and we gave away a lot of free books from the Book Brigade program, which we're getting ready to roll back out into the community as the weather gets nicer this summer.
Excellent. So tell us about some of the things you do have coming up with your program.
Yes, as I mentioned, the Book Brigade, this program started back in 2013. We take red wagons full of books out into the neighborhood, mostly Hammond so far, but we're really excited about expanding into new cities, new communities as we go forward. There was a big pause because of COVID-19, but then in 2023, we resumed those walks going to people's front door, asking them to come out of their house, take a free book. We're really excited about getting volunteers involved with that program. So anyone who's interested in participating. You can find more information at our website, bbb4e.org, or you could reach out to my email, which is give@bbb4e.org. Anyone who's interested in walking with us, helping sort books, or if you have a neighborhood that you would think would be a great place for us to come out and walk, we're always looking for locations. We love to go around parks, around schools, places that we know that there's going to be a good amount of families living.
Still with the Red Wagon everywhere?
Yep, still with the Red Wagon everywhere. We have a fleet of about 8 of them. They're really useful at lugging all of our books around. Typically, when we go on a walk, we take 3 to 4 wagons, depending on how many volunteers we have with us, and we walk for about 1.5 to 2 hours. So it's really a fun social activity as well for the volunteers who get out there and join us.
Monthly ambassador meetings.
Definitely. So this is something that is going on a year now, and we started it after our spring tea last year, really just an open meeting, about 1 hour long. I usually do a quick presentation on everything that the Book Brigade program has been up to, whether that's an update on how many free books we gave away the previous month, or planning for the Read Across the Region project. It just depends on what time of year that meeting is happening at. But so far, we've had a really great turnout of 8 to 12 consistent community leaders joining us, whether it's a retired teacher, someone else who works at a different nonprofit, city representatives, library representatives. We really just want to get people together talking about the importance of reading and ways that we can amplify literacy programs in Hammond and beyond all throughout Northwest Indiana.
Now, you do have an upcoming event on May 15th. Tell us a little bit about that and about the choir program.
Yes, it's actually May 19th. There was a typo in my notes that I sent you previously, but Monday, May 19th, will be the spring concert for the Midwest choir program. So this year we have a youth level with students ages 5 all the way up to 16, 17, finishing out their high school careers. So all those students are working together, learning from each other. It's a really great group that meets once a week. And then we also resumed our adult choir back in January. So this group of adults, there's about 8 to 12 members. Really just, you don't need experience in singing. You don't need background in professional performing. It's just a community social group. But that concert on May 19th will be the opportunity for them to showcase what they've learned after 4 months of rehearsal every week.
Excellent. Well, in our final minute there, one question I have is, they just sign up. There's really no audition process. And then tell us about website information, how people can get to you, and also when the Books Brigade starts in our last few moments here.
Yes, definitely. So our website is BBB4E. That's the letter or number 4, not typed out, BBB4E.org. And that is where you can find all of our information about music programs, the book program. We don't have a set date for when Book Brigade walks will resume. Now that the weather's getting nicer more consistently, we're starting to plan those things out. But as soon as June, July, we hope to be out in the community delivering books. So get in contact sooner rather than later.
Very good. That's Ian Brumbridge from the Books, Brushes, Bands, and Education for Education. And you hear the website. You can contact them if you're interested in being involved either in the books or the concert. Thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air Spotlight.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much, Ian.
Art on the Air Spotlight and the complete one-hour program on Lakeshore Public Media is brought to you by McCauley Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker.
Hi, this is singer-songwriter Kenny White, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We are happy to welcome Jasmine Arakawa to Art on the Air. You are listening to a tiny bit of winged soul. Jasmine is a critically acclaimed pianist who has played all around the world, praised for her characterful sparkle. She has special interest in Spanish repertoire and has recorded solo and chamber pieces by Spanish and Latin American composers. She's a graduate of Tokyo University of the Arts and holds a Doctor of Music and Masters of Music degrees in piano performance from Indiana University. She is currently an associate professor of piano and piano area coordinator at the University of Florida and director of the UF International Piano Festival. Plus, she also has a strong ties with our fabulous Orboviches and the Michigan City Chamber Music Festival. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Jasmine. Very lovely meeting you.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to talk to you both.
Well, Jasmine, we always like to know our guests' background. I always call it their origin story, and we already talked a little bit about it in the intro, but we want to hear it from you. How you got from where you were to where you are now? So tell us all about Jasmine.
So I was born in Japan and raised in Hokkaido, the northern part of Japan, and went to high school and an undergraduate school in Tokyo. I was in Tokyo for 7 years, and I came to the States for my master's degree. I was looking for a graduate school, and I was very fortunate to get into Indiana University, and that's where I met the fantastic teachers, all that, and so that's how I came to the States, and the rest is a history. I think I've been teaching in the States since, ever since. So this is actually my 20th year since I moved to the States. But I spent all my childhood playing the piano, and I'm, as much as I'm thankful for, practicing, I would say like 8 to 10 hours every day, almost when I was very young. And but I missed out a lot of things, I feel like. And then, but I knew I wanted to be a pianist from very early on. Well, largely because my parents were very supportive, and also I didn't really have other choices as well.
Right.
And the typical sort of, Asian parents, I would say. I think I get to say that because I am one of them. I was very interested in other things as well. I think partly because of that, I was very interested in international affairs and international activities, and always wanted to get out of Japan as much as I loved the country. And then that's where I decided to come to the States to pursue my further education in piano and music in the States. So that's where I began. And since I graduated from Indiana, I taught a little bit. I did a lot of accompanying at Western Illinois University in Macomb, Illinois, for 2 years. And I lived in Champaign, Illinois, a little bit, and then moved to Mobile, Alabama for 3 years. I taught there at the University of South Alabama. And then in 2017, I got to where I am in Gainesville, Florida.
That's quite the route. But I want to go back to Japan. And so what was family life? Did your parents play musical instruments, or what was available? What was the household like? What was it like growing up in Japan?
Yeah. Probably unlike many people, my parents did not play music. They were not musical at all. My dad used to play a little bit of violin when he was younger, but he is in medicine. Both my parents are in health industry. Especially my dad wanted to support me in music. I think he wanted to be a musician or be an artist. He was really into writing novels and things like that. So he always had the fascination of arts and music. So whenever he discovered that I'm pretty good at what I do and playing the piano and studying music, he said, well, medicine is great, but music is better. So why don't you just pursue music? There's no point of, pursuing, the medicine or science or anything that in the real world, I think a lot of parents do encourage those fields. But I grew up in a household which was completely flipped. They, for some reason, thought arts was the best thing that you could do if you get to do it. So that's I'm very thankful for that. That sort of philosophy that especially my dad had, and my mom was really supportive of that as well. But then, of course, it comes with discipline, and I had to practice, every day and many, many hours, did a lot of competitions. And if I did not do well, then, maybe there's no dinner, or, you must practice 3 hours before getting a treat or anything like that. So it was a very, very, I'd say, disciplined environment in a way.
Right. And this is like an impossible question, but now that you've been through that and you are where you are, like when we all dream, like the what ifs, if we had taken a different path, are you interested in medicine? Do you think that that was something that you might have enjoyed? And did you gravitate toward the piano, or were there other instruments that were interesting to you? Because Japan has like such a wealth of beautiful native instruments.
I actually have a very good friend from high school. He plays shakuhachi, which is sort of a Japanese flute type of instrument recorder, I would say. I love those instruments, but I never, since I wasn't focused on one instrument in a way, I did not have an opportunity to learn other instruments. And I sort of regret that right now, but I was very focused on piano. When we talk about other fields, no, interestingly enough, I was never really interested in medicine, partly because I was seeing my dad and mom working all the time. And, you know, when you see these people around you all the time, it's either you love it or you hate it. Mm-hmm. And I just, for some reason, I never really, it was not my calling at all.
Right. The shop talk didn't interest. Yeah, I bet they talked about it all the time, and it probably you knew that you didn't.
I was very interested in learning other cultures and, sort of international environment as well. So, probably because of all these times that I spend in music, because when we say music, there's so many music, you know, pop, rock, jazz, classical. But when I say music as a child growing up in Japan, it was a classical. I'm 100% classically trained pianist. But so the literature that you learn, the repertoire you play are, you know, mostly European at the time. And there's some, you know, Latin America, some American composers, but mainly German, French, British, maybe some Italian musicians. So that kind of always grew in my, you know, my mind that I wanted to, you know, get out there and know more about those culture, literature, and painting, and things like that. So maybe that's the basis of it. But then I started being really interested in doing something else, let's say business or economics or international development. I, at one time, and when I was in high school, I was very interested in maybe going to United Nations and maybe teaching music in the developing countries and things like that. So I always had that desire of going outside of Japan and doing something. And I think looking back, that was my mission. In a way, of course, playing the piano is a tool, but it's not the goal. And I think everybody, especially an artist, we all have the mission to do. And, you know, if you're good at dancing or good at violin or singing, whatever that is. But beyond that, what you want to do is, I think it's really important. And of course, as a child, I had no idea what I was thinking, what my goals are. But I think now that looking back, that was my important thing. And I was fortunate to be able to continue what I do. But so when going back to other fields, let's say if I were doing medicine, for some reason, I'm not really good at science and chemistry and all that. So there's no way. But let's say if I were good and doing that, I'm sure I wanted to get out of Japan and doing maybe, you know, doctors out without borders or something like that. Those are the kind of things that I would have been interested in it anyway. So it's interesting to see what you're interested in, what you do, but then beyond that, what your mission is something that is, when I look back, it's really interesting.
You know, the question I have you brought up is all the places you've been in the United States, and you were talking about that. Were you kind of taken by the variety of cultures? I mean, you were from Alabama, and so, you know, speak to that. You know, all the places you've been, it's got to be like kind of a cultural shock. I think I perceive that Japan is much more uniform in the culture overall, but the United States, you know, it's completely different from one place to another.
You are absolutely right. And also, you know, Japan is a small, much smaller country, of course. They do have a different cultural tendencies and people, but still it's more uniform, as you say. And interestingly enough, I'm traveling now much more in the United States than in Japan, because I was a student, I was a child, and I was practicing all the time. I went to college. So when I spend my time, the first 20 2-3 years of my life, I didn't really get to travel much. I just lived with my parents, went to school, and maybe traveled a little bit for concerts because I started performing already quite earlier. But still, that was very limited. But now the second half, you know, another 20 years or so in the States, of course, I have much more. I had lived in different states as well as performing a lot. So in a way, it's really fascinating to explore and then meet people in a different states. And yeah, when I came to the South for the first time, it was big difference. But I know I'm extremely lucky so far, but everywhere I go, people are so welcoming, and you know, arts community, especially in the universities. So I've been very lucky. The one fun fact maybe is that the first time I went to Mobile, mm-hmm. Alabama for my job interview at the University of South Alabama, and then the people there are, you know, fascinating people. I really loved all the colleagues there. But the first day, you know, there's an interview and I'd apply, you know, my recital. I teach masterclass and all that. At the end of the day, I was exhausted. Typical search. If you are at the university, when you are going for a job, you have to go to this lunch and a dinner, and that's part of sort of the interview. So you need to behave well and talking to people and all this. So it's a very intense day. And I think I can't remember exactly what happened, but it was a very intense day. So I was exhausted, and about maybe 9:30 p.m. or so. And then the search chair, wonderful faculty, says like, he was driving me back to the hotel, and we passed by the Krispy Kreme, and I did not know what Krispy Kreme was. And he's like, "Are you serious? You don't know Krispy Kreme? You've never been to Krispy Kreme?" And I said, "No." And I said, "We must stop by." And it was a hot time. So there I had my first hot Krispy Kreme, and I just literally fell in love with it. It was so good. And especially after such a long day of hard working, I just, this, so that was my introduction to the South.
So, you know, I would like to talk about Winged Soul. How did, can you give us some of the history of it, but why this piece was chosen for the event you're going to be doing?
So, as I think everybody has sort of specialties or, you know, things that you like to play, you don't like to play. And at this point of my, you know, artistic career, I feel that I would like to play, of course, the standard repertoire, as much as something that I can only tell the story, or something that I value that maybe a lot of other people don't know or haven't heard of. And I think that's a very important mission for pianists and musicians and artists itself. And so I've been looking into promoting some of the pieces that are maybe recently written or written long time ago, but haven't been shared so much. So I'm a faculty at the University of Florida in Gainesville, as I mentioned, and we have a great composition department. And I was approached by one of my friends who happened to be the staff member there. Jasmine, there is a wonderful composition student who was commissioned to write this piece based on a poetry and an artwork of a Japanese person. And so this student, his name is Michael Dixon, and he's a wonderful composer who is graduating from the University of Florida, and he is joining, I think it's official now, but he's joining the graduate school at Indiana University Bloomington this coming fall. So this is a wonderful connection, I think, to Indiana, and I'm an IU alumna,
and to you,
alumna,
yes,
as well. So that was another reason I thought this would be a really great way to introduce his piece to the Indiana audience as an Indiana premiere this May. But anyway, so he, the whole reason he wrote this piece is that it was commissioned by a lady who is in Atlanta, Beth Furuta, and her husband's father is Soichi Furuta, and he was a Japanese poet and also an artist. He painted and was basically the Renaissance man of that time. And he was born in 1927. He was born in a family in LA, but he grew up in Japan and came back to the States and became very well known for his writing and poem, and he was also the president of the Haiku Society of New York, and he was also a teacher. He wrote many books, both in English and Japanese, but one of the books that he wrote was this, for those who are listening, looking at the, because we are doing the Zoom, so you can see the book, it's Snow Falls Inside Out. That's the little book that he wrote. It's a poem, but he also wrote a beautiful painting.
Yeah, the art is so beautiful.
Yeah, and it comes with, I'm just randomly flipping the pages, and you can see that's presented in a very beautiful artistic way. So this is the book. So he wanted to have a piece that would accompany this book of both poem and the artwork as well. So Michael Dixon wrote this beautiful piece. It's about 10 minutes, 9 to 10 minutes piece that accompanies. So this piece is designed to play while the painting and the text is presented. And that's when I premiered this in Florida last month, and was a great hit. So I'm going to bring it to Indiana.
Well, let's take a quick listen to an excerpt of it because we want to get back to chatting with you. This is The Winged Soul. It was by Michael Dixon. Jasmine Arakawa is going to be playing it for us. And that was Winged Soul, Michael Dixon's composition, who's a student and going to be graduating soon, going to be, I guess, at Indiana University, Jasmine Arakawa. And you can hear that at an afternoon of chamber music. It's a fundraising concert that's going to be at the historic Bankoff home for the Michigan City Chamber Festival.
So, Jasmine, when I listened to it, it really felt like a light, kind of stark chill. And I could imagine your fingers just like barely or sparely hovering over the keys. It was such a the tiniest, like you're doing the tiniest touch to create that music. And it was beautiful.
Thank you so much. And it really kind of reminded me of my childhood. I grew up in Sapporo, so just in the northern part of Japan, and it snow was, you know, part of my daily life. And it's just, I would spend hours just looking at snow outside, and that kind of very sensitive, nuanced things. And this piece really gives me the sort of artistic liberty to do a lot of things. And I think it's a wonderful piece. And I hope
it's so beautiful, but you feel the cold with it, you know, like mm-hmm. it felt mm-hmm. cold. It was beautiful.
Thank you.
Any other thing, prospects coming up in performances outside of your teaching? I assume during the summer that you have more concert type things. Do you have any other things besides the Michigan City event?
Yes. Before moving on to, I just wanted to mention a little bit about the concert. So this concert is on May 18th at 3:00 in Michigan City. And this is a fundraising event for the full-fledged Michigan City Chamber Music Festival that is happening in August 9th. August 9th is the first day of the concert as well. So I will be back in Michigan City in August. Before that, I am a director of International Piano Festival here in Gainesville, Florida. So that is happening from June 7th through 14th. We have international guests and students and daily event of a lot of piano event, masterclass, concerts, and lessons as well. After that, I'm going to Greece for about a week. I'm a guest artist at the Piano Plus Festival in Zante, Greece. So that would be, this is my first time going to Greece. So I'm super excited about it. And I'm also playing in Maine, Montau School of Music, Ravel Piano Concerto in July, in the middle of July. The director of the festival is my good friend and also conductor at the University of Florida, Tiffany Liu. So I will be up in Maine as well before coming back to Michigan City in August.
Wow, busy schedule. Wow. Well, unfortunately, we need to wrap it up here. It's been such a pleasure meeting you. Again, afternoon of chamber music at the Fundraising House Concert. It's going to be at the historic Bahnhof home in Michigan City. It's part of the Michigan City Chamber Festival, and you'll be hearing Winged Soul, and that's a Michael Dixon piece, actually a student who's just graduated. Yasmin Arakawa will be playing that, and you can find out information online if you do a search at Michigan City Chamber Festival. It's been a real pleasure, Jasmine, to have you on the show and sharing your arts journey and your music journey.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, thank you. All the best.
Hey, this is Bela Fleck, and you're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, and on WVLP, 103.1 FM.
We would like to welcome Adam Halon to Art on the Air. Adam is a Valparaiso-based artist and graphic designer. While his days are spent in corporate graphic design, his off time is also immersed in creativity, mixing Northwest Indiana local landmarks, legends, and lore with his childhood love of Mad magazines, trading cards, and horror films. He parlayed that into Couch Wolf, designing shirts, stickers, pins, and prints rooted in Northwest Indiana. Thank you for joining us on Art on the Air. Aloha and welcome, Adam. It's very nice meeting you.
Oh, it's so nice to meet you guys too. Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Glad to have you on the show. Yeah, I guess you reached out to us, which was really great that you heard about our show and wanted to talk about your background. And that's what we like to share with our show. We always like to share our guests' background. I always like to say their origin story, how they got from where they were to where they are now. So tell us all about Adam.
Yeah, sure. Well, I was born in the region, which I think probably most of the listeners know is Northwest Indiana. I was born in Griffith, and I live next to railroad tracks, and I think that is going to shape a lot of everything that comes from here, which is I was totally fascinated with trains and like watching the trains go by and like the different colors of the train cars and the logos. They were such like big, impactful designs, you know, and I was literally, you know, 2 to 3, like when these things started, you know, being involved in my life, and I became very obsessed with them. And like, I think that's like when I started drawing, it was kind of like a caveman, like, you know, creating what he saw, like, I wanted to be involved with them. And I had train sets and, but you know, I would just try to recreate like the things I saw, and, you know, the colors were so vibrant and the logos were so distinct. And like, you know, I didn't know what letters were, but like, you know, they say a kid can often recognize like the golden arches before they can write their name. And I definitely knew like Burlington Northern and like the Chessie system and all of these various railroad lines, because my dad would say like, that's a this car and that's a that car. So that kind of got my start in drawing. And my dad worked on cars a lot, so he had some pretty cool cars. And like, I remember, you know, again, before you could read, like the Firebird logo, you know, that's, they call it a screaming chicken. You know, it's like a bird with its wings spread, breathing fire. And it was just, those were such cool, like, iconic things. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, such impactful things, you know, like, I mean, I know they're designed to like leave an impression on adults, but, you know, like something in graphic design is obviously just, you know, making things as simple as possible and easy to process. And so, like, they clearly worked on a child. Yeah. So my parents were, you know, typical in the region. My dad was a steel worker and my mom was a nurse. So they weren't specifically like creative people by like nature or anything, but like they exposed us to a lot of media. And I'm the first of four kids. So, you know, they had tons of records. So we were always listening to music, you know, I mean, everything, classic rock, Motown, whatever, anything, jazz, you know, so there was that. And they, we watched all kinds of movies, and like, that is super impactful. I feel like there was movies, like they never cared about us watching something that we probably shouldn't have been watching because of how old we were. So, I mean, you know, like, we were watching like Ghostbusters and Aliens and Raiders of the Lost Ark and Terminator and like, all of these things have become like super iconic films now, but this was like the 80s.
Oh, but so they're
like,
so visually exciting, yeah, right. Anyway.
Oh my God. Yeah, they totally were. And like, then those things kind of started becoming things I would draw, and, you know, obviously Star Wars. And so like that kind of became like another way of connecting with these things was always drawing them and making art about them. And obviously like I had the toys with them, but like, I guess I was just always wanting like another way to express my love for these things. And like, that was art. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So no. So in elementary school, was that recognized? Were you the artist in school drawing things?
I was.
What was elementary school and middle school like art wise?
Sure. Yeah. Well, like in school, I was never interested in doing my work. My teachers would recognize my artistic talent and like encourage it, but like I was known. My mom still tells the story of, you know, she got called in because I wasn't doing my homework, and they like go in my desk and like there's all these blank worksheets, but like on the back of them is all this artwork, all these drawings, you know, of dinosaurs, Ninja Turtles, Star Wars, you know, the Terminator, probably things again that they were like, is this kid a little disturbed? He's drawing these, you know, these violent films on the back of his worksheets and not doing his worksheets. But yeah, so, you know, I was still encouraged, you know, I was encouraged to do my work, but I just wasn't interested in that. And we had, you know, I remember my mom would bring home like in the 80s when like printers were, you know, like all the paper was connected and you had the perforated edges, and like there was no treat like getting, like they had stuff on the front, but the back was just blank white paper, like no lines. It was like such a treat when she'd bring home like infinite paper and you just felt like you could just create to your heart's desire. And I remember I so looked forward to, we had like once a week, we got to go to art class in elementary school for an hour. And I mean, I just couldn't believe it. Like, you know, like, I mean, you're like, they give you these supplies and they're like, hey, draw. And you know, you're just like, this is what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, not those worksheets. And yeah, so like that just kind of stayed the course with that, through most elementary school. And, I would say around like age 11, I see you guys are sponsored by South Shore Arts, but I started taking classes at the Munster Performing Arts Center for drawing. I had no interest in sports. I think I did like one season of T-ball where I just didn't want to chase the ball. So my mom was like, hey, you know, like, let's put them in art classes. And, you know, it was great. Like, I learned the fundamentals of drawing, like properly, like if you will, like at a very young age, like how to hold a pencil, you know, instead of like to write, just to hold it differently to draw. And you know, how to like build things, you know, like from like essentially how to like build like shapes into like a drawing and like use like measurements to get things right. So it kind of like really refined my drawing skills and like at a really young age. So yeah, I felt like I had a leg up by the time I went to middle. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go ahead. It's good to have that support.
Yeah, it was great. And you know, like we would like listen to classical music in there, and like it was kind of just like your own little alone time, even though you're in a space and there was an instructor coming around and like giving you like critiques on things. And like eventually I ended up in a class that was like for drawing superheroes, and that was kind of cool because those are, you know, like you never think about this until someone tells you, but it's like they're very anatomically driven in the sense of like they are essentially like drawing nude figures, except like, you know, they have costumes painted on them. So, I mean, you know, I learned a lot about anatomy and like how to draw things like looking in motion. And, you know, and I was also really into trading cards and like, you know, like Michael Jordan, you know, this the era of like basketball cards and Shaq being out. And, you know, so like, so, you know, now you're drawing like basketball players and superheroes. And like, you know, like I was super into the Ninja Turtles. So like, you know, now you're learning to like, you're like making these really good drawings, and I'm getting like encouraged, and, you know, I'm getting better at it. So yeah, by the time I went to middle school, like, you know, again, I was still like known as one of the kids who drew a lot. You know, we got exposed to like Frank Frazetta and like Frank Miller and like comic books and like the way that those guys drew, and like their like form and figure, like obviously just like that kind of influence stayed with me forever. Like I always loved lines. And, you know, I feel like even in like my later graphic design work, a lot of things are like love letters to like lines, or I use lines a lot, just not just to direct the eye, but as a design element.
I know. I remember, you know, we had comics as kids, but like in the 1980s, when I was exposed to like adult graphic novels, it was such a revelation. It was,
I don't know.
So I see that you went to, you know, you went career in middle school, high school doing this. And I saw the American Academy art you have on your thing, but you went there at least for some time. So tell us about that, you know, transition from high school to going there.
Yeah, absolutely. So in high school it was the same thing. I took every single art class I could, was not interested in school. Honestly, I stopped going a lot, and I would show up for my art classes and like leave a pencil in the door so I could leave for the classes I didn't want to go to and come back for my art classes. And I came out of high school not knowing at all what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. Like I had a friend who wanted to be a dentist, and that just seemed crazy to me, like to like know you wanted to do this. And I just like, I just knew I loved art. I didn't know if being a professional artist was a thing really. And, you know, some people came into those art classes from various schools and spoke to us about that. But I was like, I think going to art school was the only thing that made sense to me at that time. And I didn't know what a career in that looked like. And thankfully, like my mom pushed me to like go visit some schools. And like, I remember going to the Art Institute, and like, I think someone was filling like a bathtub with light bulbs or something. And I was like, I don't really think this is what I want to do. And then I went to the American Academy of Art, and I remember ending up in like a illustration classroom where like they had a Mallrats poster, and it like, that's a movie that's very much about comics. And the poster was, you know, like a very comic book themed poster. And it's like, this just feels right. For someone who just didn't know what they wanted to do with their life. And so, yeah, I went there. You know, everyone kind of does like a first year that's, everyone's kind of on the same track, and then you're supposed to like declare a major. And I still didn't really know what I wanted to do, and they told us, you know, more or less like you can't make a living drawing naked people. So I ended up in a graphic design class at some point, and all that stuff of like drawing logos and knowing letters, and I couldn't believe it. Never had occurred to me that that was a career. And that was something that I could, you know, pursue. And so I that was like my first, you know, time like doing like actual graphic design and working with like Photoshop and InDesign. And I mean, that from there, like, I was like, this is what I want to do. Like, this seems like it's a great merger of, you know, traditional drawing and the things that I've always been in love with.
You're listening to Art on the Air on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM on WVLP. 103.1 FM. It's so true. When I went to school too, they never once was graphic design mentioned to me, yet it would have been a perfect fit as well. So
yeah, I know. I couldn't believe it. So, you know, it was very hard to commute down there every day. For, you know, 2 years I did that, and ended up just pursuing a design degree at Purdue North Central. It was called Purdue Calumet at the time. And I, you know, it was kind of just, it was like, at that point I was just in the mindset of like, get in, get out. Like I wanted to start working, you know, and like doing design things. So like, you know, it's a commuter school, both of those were. So like, you didn't get that experience of like a big college, you know, and like living away and all of that. But so, yeah, so like I got my design degree. It was crazy, like right out of, before I had graduated, I had a professor tapped me like for being an adjunct lecturer. Like it's basically like contingent on like, if you graduate, I mean, not because, you know, it was me. So of course school was always like, at that point I just wanted to get out. So I actually did buckle down and was like a good student. And I was interested in like my design classes very much. And so, yeah, I couldn't believe, you know, like I would say a couple weeks after being out of college, because I finished in the summer, like I was like teaching college. And that was a great experience. I was probably not qualified and in over my head, but like I really related to my students because I wasn't much older than a lot of them. And I think the ones that were older than me, like that was a bizarre experience to be like, you're 35 and suddenly this like 25-year-old dude is the teacher. But yeah, you know, I mean, like I dressed like them. I didn't like, cause that's just how I dressed. And I didn't like, you know, to be up there at a podium, like a dictator. Like I was more like, let's all drag our chairs in a circle. And like, you know, something that we got very little of, like, cause I had come through this program was, you know, like doing critiques, you know, like we did in art school. And like, I always thought those were so constructive because like, you know, like the criticism normally came from a place of love. Like it wasn't just, you know, like browbeat your enemy or something like that.
No, so, it was for improvement. It wasn't for criticism. It was for improvement.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, in both like teaching and, you know, showing your work to peers, like it's always very, to me, like obvious when you look at what someone else is working on or they're struggling with a thing to, from the outside, I feel like it's usually easy to come in and be like, well, why don't you try this? Or I think like maybe if you make that smaller or move that there. And, you know, so like it just facilitated everybody being more open to like go like look at what other people were doing and go back and forth on it. And, you know, by the time, you know, especially as, you know, if you're doing like intermittent reviews of things, it was pretty hard for someone to turn in a bomb. Like, you know, like you would have had to be something that I hadn't seen or like, you know, it was really surprising. So yeah, that was a wonderful experience. And at that time I started like a job in production design working at Blue Chip Casino, which is in Michigan City, Indiana. And I mean, that was, you know, there were so many brands under one roof. So to be like a young graphic designer and it's like, you know, there's a casino, there's a spa, there's a hotel, there's, you know, all these great things. And they're all different. They all had different brand guidelines. So like, I feel like it was kind of like a crash course. And like, it wasn't just having like an in-house graphic design job where it's like, we have one brand and like everything looks like this. And something that was super interesting was like, I was hired, like there was a girl that was going to go on maternity leave. And so like, I was going to be doing her work like when she was out. And I took a lot of pride in that it was, you know, like she just tended to do like, there was four designers and three of them were guys. And she did like the girly stuff, if you will, like the spa and kind of things that should have like a, you know, more feminine feel, if you will. And I like was really proud of basically chameleoning myself into that and people being like, oh, this looks like something that Erica designed. And it was like, nope, Adam designs that. Like nobody noticed a break in like, you know, the consistency of how certain things were looking. So yeah, like that was a great experience. From there, I went to the YMCA, which like, you know, that's a very different, you know, going from somewhere that just is literally like a hole you throw money into to a scrappy operation where like, you know, I was taking a lot of the photos that we were using myself. You know, everything was very, very hands-on. It was a little awkward to be like a 25-year-old guy in like a middle-aged women's yoga class and like being like, you're supposed to shoot photos. I was very grateful. Like I had a wonderful like design intern and she was a girl. So I felt like that kind of offset, like, you know, how awkward that could be at times. From there, you know, by the way, at this point, you know, to work at the Y, like I've left the region and I've moved to Chicago. So, you know, now I'm like being immersed in more of the design culture there. And like, I started a participating in the AIGA, which is like the American Institute for Graphic Artists. I probably got that wrong. Someone send me some hate mail and correct me. But So from the Y, then I went to the American Board of Medical Specialties. And what's crazy was they're like a legacy organization that does like certification, board certification of doctors. And they've been around for a long time and they had a logo. But like, I think they've been around for like 50 something years by the time I got there, but they'd never had an in-house graphic designer. So like all of their stuff was kind of just, you know, like it didn't all fit together well. And like, and they're medical people, they're data focused, like they're not creatives. And, you know, it seemed like it was going to be quite a force to try and like build them a brand and get them all under the same roof with that. So, I kind of did it.
So what is that consultation like? So do you, like when you were working with them, did you already have like, well, these are going to be the colors and this is the direction I want to take it in? And I mean, I'm sure there was probably a bit of like, this is what we want, maybe.
Right. Maybe yeah. There was some of that. And then there was a lot of like me just being like, here's a project, there's a project. But they all, like, they didn't know it. Like, they kind of came together and you're like, wait, all these projects kind of like have a similar vein. And you're like, exactly. Like, I built a brand like around you, like without you like really having to be given like one big pitch to do it. Yeah. And so, you know, from there I had some other design jobs. Let's see, like most notably, like I worked at Life Fitness, the company that designs like fancy gym equipment. And they were like designing like a cool treadmill that had like terrain you could run on. Like it would like change to feel like, oh, you're running on sand or you're running on dirt. Yeah. And so then, you know, like comes like the big tech layoff that like we're still kind of in the midst of. And I was out of the job and I'd recently moved back to Indiana after like a decade of living in Chicago. And, you know, like I kind of was just in a little bit of like, a creative rut for a while after, you know, getting laid off. And I was just like taking a little break and like, and that's when I was like, I wanted to do something creative. And I kind of had like two lanes. I was either going to start like going back and working on my fine art kind of thing, like pen drawings and pencil drawings and all of that. Or like, I wanted to like merge those things with graphic design. And that's when Couch Wolf kind of happened by accident, which was I had just been doing some of these designs that were kind of like a love letter to like home in the region and Chicago. And one of my friends was like, you know, you should put this stuff on Etsy and like just see what happens. So like, if you remember the Chicago rat hole, which was like a patch of concrete that a rat fell into, and or I think it was a squirrel, but everyone said it was a rat. And it just dried like with this print of like a rat flattened, and people made pilgrimages there and threw coins in it to make wishes and got married there. So I made some shirts about that and they were selling really well. And that kind of turned into like, hey, like maybe, you know, you love legends and lore, you love like all this stuff like locally that you grew up with, like maybe you should start making shirts about that, you know? So then like in the region, it's like everyone's a region rat. So I started making shirts about region rats and, you know, like the steel mills, because, you know, it seems like everybody's related to some steel worker. Right. And, you know, like this is like where the Mad magazines and stuff that I probably shouldn't have had as a kid kind of like, you know, drew a lot of influence of just like silly caricatures of like rats smoking cigarettes. And yeah, so.
And, you know, we're actually getting closer our last couple minutes here. And so we went, you know, you have the different products. So what other ideas you have for Couch Wolf? And maybe even start beginning to tell us a little bit about how people can find you online and what they can expect to see in your, I know you have a couple different websites.
Yeah, yeah. I'll say mostly because we're just on the Couch Wolf track about like, there's always going to be more region rat designs, but I mean, there's lots of Indiana Dunes inspired stuff. You know, I love taking like film photography, and like that's something I wouldn't normally get to do in my day graphic design. And everything with Couch Wolf has kind of been like almost like the opposite of, you know, the way I would approach or like the mediums I would get to use in like my day office job. So it's like lots of pencil drawings and film photography that gets turned into shirts. And like, yeah, what I love about that is, you know, for like a $3 or whatever, someone can buy a sticker and have like a piece of art. And, you know, like that's really cool versus buying like, you know, something at an art show that's thousands of dollars. So yeah, all of the Couch Wolf stuff is on couchwolfshop.com. And there's also social media that, you know, I try to be on top of all the time, showing off new stuff. Like right now I'm working on like a design for Shoe Corner, if you know about that in St. John, where people just randomly throw their shoes out the window. But yeah, on Facebook it's Couch Wolf at Couch Wolf Shop, and on Instagram it's FullMoon_Couch_Wolf. And you can see my professional work at adamhalon.com. And reach out if you're looking for some freelance design, if whether you're a huge company or a small local business.
Well, we appreciate you coming on Art on the Air. In fact, your picture on our website will link to at least one of those sites. And that's Adam Halon. And you can see him at adamhalon.com is his one, couchwolfshop.com, and he has an Etsy shop. Thank you so much for coming on Art on the Air and sharing your not only graphic, but arts journey.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Best of luck.
Yeah, thank you.
We'd like to thank our guests this week on Art on the Air, our weekly program covering the arts and arts events throughout Northwest Indiana and beyond. Art on the Air is heard Sunday at 7 p.m. on Lakeshore Public Media, 89.1 FM, also streaming live at lakeshorepublicmedia.org, and is available on Lakeshore Public Media's website as a podcast. Art on the Air is also heard Friday at 11 a.m. and Monday at 5 p.m. on WVLP 103.1 FM, streaming live at WVLP.org. If you have a smart speaker like Amazon Alexa, Google Assistant, or Apple Siri, just tell to play Art on the Air to hear the latest episode. Our spotlight interviews are heard every Wednesday on Lakeshore Public Media. Thanks to Tom Maloney, Vice President of Radio Operation for Lakeshore Public Media, and Greg Kovach, WVLP's Station Manager. Our theme music is by Billy Foster with a vocal by Renee Foster. Art on the Air is supported by an Indiana Arts Commission Arts Project Grant, South Shore Arts, and the National Endowment for the Arts. We'd like to thank our current underwriters for Lakeshore Public Media, Macaulay Real Estate in Valparaiso, Olga Patrician, Senior Broker. And for WVLP, Walt Breidinger of Paragon Investments. So we may continue to bring you Art in the Air, we rely on you, our listeners and underwriters, for ongoing financial support. If you're looking to support Art on the Air, we have information on our website at breck.com/AOTA, where you can find out how to become a supporter or underwriter of our program in whatever amount you are able. And like I say every week, don't give till it hurts. Give till it feels good. You'll feel so good about supporting Art on the Air. If you're interested in being a guest or sending us information about your arts, arts-related event or exhibit, please email us at AOTA@breck.com. That's AOTA@breck.com. BRECH.com, or contact us through our Facebook page. Your hosts were Larry Breckner and Esther Golden, and we invite you back next week for another episode of Art on the Air.
Aloha, everyone. Have a splendid week.
Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. You're in the know with Esther and Larry. Art on the Air today. Stay in the know with Larry and Esther. Art on the Air our way. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world your heart. Express yourself through art and show the world.